tragic accident changed the course of his life forever. For most, it would have begun a life of discontent and wallowing around in self-misery. For Jonathan Nadeau, it kickstarted a new chapter of inspiration and appreciation. Even though he lost his sight permanently, he gained a passion to put creativity first in all areas of his life. And now, he wants to encourage you to do the same. There are times when you'll be faced with a choice. Be crushed by the weight of the situation, or use the fresh start to rebound bigger, better, and more inspired than ever before. This is Tornado, stories of those who refuse to choose defeat and instead chose to embrace the storm. Here's your host, Jonathan Nadeau.
Greetings and salutations. Thank you for joining us on Embrace Your Storm. I'm Jonathan Nadeau, as always, and we've got another awesome interview with you with another exciting creator that is going to be at the Tornado Music and Film Festival on August 27th at Foxwoods. You don't want to miss us. There is a lot going on, and there's like day by day more stuff is happening. So stay tuned with that. Today we have on Mike Messier, and he's not related to Mark Messier, but he does share the same last name, and he's got a great film that's going to be playing here. It's called Seduction of Distance. So, Mike, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, John, this is great to be here. And, you know, as we were talking about earlier, I have actually been to Foxwoods many, many times. I've seen boxing on the closed circuit screen there. I've seen live events there, live mixed martial arts events. I've played the slots. So I'll be having a good time, and it's a great venue, that's for sure.
It is. It is a great venue. Like, we're stoked. And even Foxwoods is excited about having us there, which is very cool too. So it's going to be an awesome time. So Mike, before we jump into your film and everything, how did you even get involved in all this? Like, I mean, what made you start? You want to grab a video camera or whatever and start making a film?
The origins go back to childhood, and when I was a young guy, I figured out that if I took two VCRs and replaced the audio out from one VCR from a boombox, like the audio out of a boombox using the Radio Shack.
Yeah, the RCA cords or whatever,
The RCA cords, if people remember them, the yellow, white, red, which you still get them a lot of times, but I would basically, through a system of cumbersome grinding of the VCR heads, I would make these music videos that weren't timed perfectly because I really had no editing other than my thumb, you know, grinding the pause button on the record button.
Yeah, exactly.
But I made a video for the Road Warriors wrestling tag team.
Hawk and Animal.
Exactly. I really wish I could find this thing because it was actually quite good. And it was that I made a second one for a class project. This is what I learned, John, was if I spend a couple of hours making a music video for my class high school project, the people are going to be so impressed because nobody else was doing this in my high school.
Right.
That I'm going to get a really good grade when everyone else is slaving over these papers for a week and a half or whatever they were doing. So I made a music video using Elton John's Rocket Man, the themes of A Farewell to Arms, I believe, by Ernest Hemingway.
Okay.
And so that video has actually been found. My friend Tim Labonte helped me transfer it from the original VHS to YouTube. So if people go to my YouTube channel, which is titled Subscribe to Mike Messier YouTube Channel, if they go to the Mike's Archives playlist, they can see a very young Mike Messier bouncing around Northern Virginia in his best Elton John music video. Yeah,
that's cool. That's cool. I think I told this story to another guy where, back in the day, I had, in the mid 80s, I had my mom's, VHS cam recorder, it's like the VCR tape into the video camera and record. Yep. And so I was at this skate park with my buddies, but we had bikes. We didn't have skateboards, but they had all these ramps everywhere. So I had my mom's camera, and I also had a Walkman with me. So what I did is, the Walkmans back in those days had the wicked cheesy like little skinny plastic thing you put over your head, you know, and like they had the little like foamy ear things that would break off, right?
Yeah.
I broke off both the foamy earbud parts, and on this particular VHS camera, the, you know, that had an external microphone kind of coming out of it above the lens. So I took the two little microphone foamy pieces and I scotch taped them around the microphone. And so as we're recording us riding our bikes and going up ramps and everything, I hit play on the Walkman. And so I had a Beastie Boys tape in the Walkman. And so it sounded like we were making our own music video. It was awesome. Yeah. And like my friend saw it and like, how did you do that? Like, how did you get the music on there like that? And I told, because I put the volume down really low. It was like, right, just good, you know, just loud enough to where it was picking it up, but you could hear, you could kind of still hear the noise of us riding our bikes and everything. And I told my friends what I did, and they're just like, man, that's so cool. Like, I don't know, like we had to innovate like that back then, you know? You had to just be like, what do I have around me? How can I make something work? You know?
That's cool, man. I can imagine that, whether it was Fight for Your Right to Party or No Sleep to Brooklyn, whatever,
exactly,
whatever song
exactly
it was, I can see that being a big hit. Yeah, it's always fun, like your story or mine with the Rocket Man thing. Whenever you're the first one of your peer group to do something, it's always good for bragging rights. You know,
totally. Absolutely. So like that was your first one, like messing around with that. Like, what about when you started kind of like, what do you remember, like your first kind of camera you got? Like was it like a flip cam kind of thing or something? Or like what it?
Yeah, you know, the first camera that I actually owned, I think for a present in college, my mom got me some type of, you know, mini cassette recorder. And it was one of those things that needed like a transfer tape. And then I just said, you know what, I'd rather have kind of an older model, but like a full VHS tape. And my reasoning was just the practicality, like these tapes that were like, I don't know what.
They were the cam. They were like those smaller, like they were chunky cassette tapes.
Correct. And you'd have
It was
such a pain, because maybe the quality was a little bit higher, but you had to go through this whole tape conversion process.
Exactly.
I remember going back, if you remember this store, Circuit City.
And
kind of just explaining the situation and saying, I'd rather have a less good model that's practical rather than something that's not practical. And that's, to be honest, that's an ethic I probably still have, you know, because.
No, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Logically, that makes sense.
Right. I think after that, a couple of years after that, or several, the first camera that I had that probably had a good 15-year run with me, 10 years at least, was I believe it's called the Sony DSLR 2000 or 200.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was a great camera. It was mini DV tapes, so you'd still have to be conscious. You know, those tapes could get wrecked easily, so you had to be careful. They came in those nice little plastic boxes. And kind of like a lot of material at the time, if you taped 60 minutes, your quality was higher than if you taped it in 90 minutes.
Exactly.
And I mean, but I had that camera taping the Suicide Girls burlesque shows in the Middle East Club in Boston at the Century Lounge or the Call in Providence. And those footage. And I did a show for years in Providence called the Mike Messier Show, which was a public access show that I had from literally midnight till 2 a.m. on one channel, 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. on the other channel. The funny thing is, Jonathan, a lot of people told me they actually watched the 3 o'clock version, because these were people that were working at restaurants. You know, on the weekends. So they would get out of work and they'd be so jazzed up from the caffeine or whatever else that my show would be there with, you know, wrestling clips or Suicide Girls or my videos, and people would actually watch the show at that obnoxious time of night.
That's cool. So what was it like, a kind of a variety show kind of, like, would you show various clips or whatever of stuff?
Yeah, it was very raw. It was very much like, this is a guy who's here living his life in Providence, and he's doing all types of weird stuff. He's going to comedy clubs and taping himself and his you know, stand-up comedian friends doing their bits.
Yeah.
He's interviewing, I had a Providence roller derby I went to the Providence roller derby, all female roller derby.
That's cool.
And then, you know what? The funny thing is I used some of those same editing techniques. I remember taking clips of the Providence roller derby, which, you know, visually it's a great dynamic because you have these attractive college girls, you know, banging each other around.
Right,
the roller derby
right.
track, but it can be a little bit tedious. So what I would do is mix music, you know, I put music
cool.
in and just liven it up. And one of the roller derby girls came to my apartment and did an interview, and she explained, like, hey, you know, the question was like, hey, you're a 22-year-old, you know, attractive college girl studying art. Why are you on this rink risking
smashing
your...
people?
Right. and she had a good answer. I mean, she and it was really just the love of the game, like any other athlete. And that kind of made me realize, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover. Just because she's an attractive art school girl doesn't mean that she doesn't have the soul of a warrior as well. You know,
exactly.
I mean?
Totally. So, totally.
There you go. Yeah.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So then, like, I think we were talking about this before. So coming back around to, I just got a message. Coming back around to, of Despondence. I forgot the first word.
Seduction of Despondence.
Yeah. Seduction. Yeah. Sorry. So coming back around to that, like what, how did you start getting this off the ground? I know there's kind of a story before this, like I think with the vampire film that you were doing.
Right. So. Yeah. And I'll try to give the synopsis without taking up too much time, but basically
no problem.
In 2014, I was attempting to make a piece called Disregard the Vampire, which was scheduled to be a low budget, but high quality vampire narrative film. We had like some really good equipment. We had like, I think it was called the Black Magic camera.
Oh, those are nice cameras. Yeah.
Yeah. So
we
had a beautiful location, which was actually near the University of Rhode Island. So not too far from Foxwoods.
Oh, nice.
And long story short, the lead actor had to drop out of the project after we had already started filming.
Man, that stinks.
Yes. And so crazily enough, I brought in a singer, a really great guy named Scorpio, to be the new lead actor. And he was great, except like I say, if you asked the best college football player in the country who happens to be sitting in the stands during the Super Bowl, hey, we just injured our first three quarterbacks, can you hop in the game and play for us? Even that college football player would not be quite adept. I'm just making a really a metaphor here, because we put this guy Scorpio in a tough position, and it wasn't, you know, really he did everything right. It was just the fact that our time was so compromised. And long story short, I made that Disregard the Vampire. I reassigned it to be a documentary about what happens when you have a lead actor drop out of your narrative film project, and what we did in an attempt to rescue this thing. And the documentary has won 13 awards of various kinds. The Diabolical Horror Film Festival, the Shaun O'Shea Film Festival out of Uxbridge, Mass. Has all given awards to this documentary, which is basically 40 minutes. It's on YouTube. If people go to subscribe to Mike Messier YouTube channel, and the words are Disregard the Vampire, a Mike Messier documentary, it's got about 2,500 views at this point, but I'd always like to get more. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
But it's that was the beginnings of it. And then what happened next was I really... almost a process of mourning, Jonathan, like mourning the fact that we didn't make this thing that I wanted to.
Totally. I mean, it didn't turn into at all what you had pictured, right? So, you turned it into something which is very cool still, but it's not at all what you had ever imagined it would be.
Right. The actual narrative of the vampire story was long gone, because I basically wanted to create my own myth, like my own Dracula, not another vampire or not another Dracula story, but my own story. So what I did with that energy, 3 years of making the documentary, another couple of years of entering the documentary and film festivals, etc. But in the meantime, I started rewriting the thing and revamping the thing. And in that process, I felt like I needed to have a new title. You know, I felt like the Disregard the Vampire title, although it's a great title, it's more associated with that moment of time, Scorpio and you know, the actresses, Anna and Gina and Jose, the other actor, and all of those people, for one reason or another, were no longer attached to the project. And so when it started whittling down to, like, oh, wow, I'm back on my own again. This is Mike and his creation. I had to change the title to A Distance from Avalon, When the Dying and the Dead Reunite, because I wanted it to be different, if not bigger, than the original concept of Disregard the Vampire. And the only thing that when people buy the book version on Amazon, they're basically getting, you know, 95% Mike Messier, and then the other 5%, which is a great 5%, is the cover art by Nazar Germanoff, who's a great guy and a great artist. He did the cover art for me. But really what you're seeing or what you're reading is, this is Mike's vision of this story. And no offense to the people that I worked with on the Disregard the Vampire shoot, because they were all awesome people. But anytime you have a collaborative effort, whether you're an auteur director or you want to be, or Alfred Hitchcock or whoever, there's always going to be some consideration, if not compromise, for your collaborators. And
totally.
One thing I've learned over this last couple of years is, I'm at the heart and soul of me, I'm a writer, and I can do other things. I can lead an acting class. I can act myself. But when it comes down to it, the thing that I'm probably best at is just writing. And that's, to me, that's a solitary effort. I've done co-writing, I've done collaborative writing, but for me, the best writing comes when it's one person writing their story the way they want it without compromise.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like A Distance from Avalon, When the Dying and the Dead Reunite, the novel version. Now, when we get into what's actually playing at your festival at Foxwoods, Seduction of Distance, essentially, I challenged myself to do what I challenge other actor friends of mine to do. Hey, you're always talking about this script. You're always talking about this story. Why don't you memorize a monologue from that story and film it as a proof of concept? And so basically, I challenged myself, and I'll give my friend Kim Kaling a lot of credit. She came on as my acting coach, which is something she had never done before, but she's up in Newport, Rhode Island, or Portsmouth, Rhode Island. And we were doing Zoom meetings in the summer of 2021. I think we did 4 or 5 Zoom meetings and a couple of phone calls where Kim would help me memorize the monologue that I myself wrote. Because even though I wrote it, it's still hard to memorize it. That's two different skill sets. Like
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was fun because Kim, you know, she's an educated lady herself, and she's an actress. So she would have occasional suggestions like, hey, maybe you should tweak this word here and there. And then it's like, if I was just the actor, I'd do whatever she said. But because I'm also the writer, at times I'm like, no, I'm the writer. I got to determine every single word.
Yeah, she'd be telling you how to act. You'd be like, that's not how I wrote it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I know, because writing, when it comes to write, like, people, you know, writers is the most interesting thing to me in the film process, because if it weren't for the writers, there'd be no story, there'd be no film, right? If it was like, right. If it wasn't for the writers. But when a film gets all huge or popular or whatever, everyone knows the actresses, everyone knows the actors, right? Oh, they got a Grammy for this, or, you know, the writers never get acknowledged for, like, anything.
That's right.
Like, you know, and it's like, I can't imagine, like, writing something, you know, like a movie or whatever. It's like an hour and a half long. It takes me, like, whatever, years of my life to put it together. And, you know, I have this story that I wrote down, and, like, you have the pictures and images of, like, what people probably look like in your head and all that. And then you hand it off to someone and they're like, hey, thanks for the script. We're going to make this happen. And it's like, now it's out of your hands. Now you got nothing but faith and trust, hoping that your script is going to look like what it looks like on the screen. Like, that to me is kind of interesting and fascinating for, you know, like, it's something to think about. Like, a lot of that's an interesting job where you do something and you hand it off and, like, your part's done. It's out of your control. You don't get credit for it, but it can turn into this behemoth.
Yeah, this will sound extreme, and it's not to be insulting or degrading to women or children, but it is like handing off your baby to the adoption agency, and you just
kind of for real.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think that's a crude way at all. I was adopted myself, and that's a good way to put it. You know, like, you're handing it off and you're just saying, take care of it, you know? And I get that. That's why I'm saying, like, I'm not a film person. I'm kind of new in this industry, but seeing the dynamics between everything is really fascinating. Like, I'm like, I don't know if I could do that. You know, it's like, it'd be like starting a business and walking away from and knowing it's going to be successful, just starting a business, walking away from it and let everyone run it how they want to run it, you know? And it's like, and you're like, that's not how I would run it. Or that's not, you know, like, I don't know. It's interesting to look at it that way. It's got to be hard.
Yeah, it is hard. There's a book, which the book title tells you everything you need to know about the book, but it's a great book titled "The Writer Got Screwed But Didn't Have to." And the book, I don't know who the writer is, but I've actually bought that book twice in my life, and it's true. I mean, the title tells you everything you need to know, but the book goes into contracts, how to protect yourself, et cetera, et cetera. But John, I've experienced this, which is I've gone through the process of getting contracts made. And then at the 11th hour, somebody sends you an email. Hey, Mike, can you sign this addendum to the contract?
Exactly. Because,
you know, the distribution company needs us to have this signed by 3 o'clock. Otherwise, we're going to lose our worldwide distribution deal. And it's like, these people put you in a position which is totally uncomfortable. And when I say these
people, it's on purpose.
Right. and sometimes these are who people you think are your friends. And sometimes they are, but they're getting put into a hammerlock of a situation too. So what I've ultimately learned, and I don't know if this is a good thing or not, but for me, at least right now with my life, I feel like the more creativity I can do and distribute and have available on my own, more or less, the better I'm going to feel. Like, even
that's
this
for sure.
Even this aspect of it, John, you know, like when I started writing these novels, A Distance from Avalon, and the other one is Fight or Play Basketball, and I just wrote a third one called Bad Girls with Good Tattoos, there's always someone that's going to say, hey, I know someone at this publishing company, or you should send a send a query letter to this company and blah, blah, blah. But the reality is I've been through 20 years of that type of thing with the film world of doing my tap dance with my tin cup for the film world and trying to get recognized and trying to get some big brother entities, you know, slap on the back. And just that type of, you know, action of me submitting my work to someone else who can thumbs up it or thumbs down it, it wasn't appealing to me. I wanted to do something on my own, and that do-it-yourself aesthetic, which, you know, man, that DIY aesthetic, that was really a thing of places like, you know, Providence, Rhode Island, New York City, LA, whatever, Seattle. I mean, all those do-it-yourself people of the, you know, 80s and 90s, it's almost too bad that they were ahead of the game, because now everybody can do it yourself with with Amazon or whatever. There's so many online platforms that an artist can make their work, but it is the same old question. You still got to convince people one way or the other to buy it.
That's true. That's true. But at least the field has been leveled, in my opinion. You know, that, like, we were having that conversation before, and this is the road you're going down. Like, if you're a creator and you just said you're better off keeping everything in your own camp, why hand it off to someone else where, you know, some sort of distribution company or whatever? Because I mean, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, if you had a screenplay or whatever, you'd have to pitch it to someone. The only way it's going to get made is if someone giving you the money will say, okay, is this story good enough to give me 10 times back more than what I gave you? If it isn't, I don't care. Like, you know, and even if it's like a great story with a great, you know, message or whatever, like now all these films can get made because there's, you know, we don't have to have the gatekeeper stopping these great films from getting made anymore. Will it be at the quality that we wanted them to be, you know, in the big screen or whatever? Maybe not. But the point is we're at that field now where anyone can get their content out there, as long as they are motivated enough, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And you said this off the air that something to the effect of, if everybody who said they wanted to do something actually did it, things would be so competitive. But a lot of people think about writing a book, or they think about making a movie, or they think about running a film festival, Mm-hmm. But how many of those that have the think I will do the I did it or I'm doing
exactly.
It?
Exactly. That's why I tell everyone, like, ideas are nothing. You know, people have a million ideas a day. What matters is executing.
Right.
You know, that's where the rubber hits the road. And because we were saying about, you know, creative people, I'm like, man, this day and age, you can go online and download 5 free video editing software. Like, it's like, what's stopping you, right? Like before, right, in the 80s and 90s, what stopped us was having access to that, right? It felt like there's more creative people back then, but we couldn't get our hands on stuff. And only the insanely creative people would figure out how to get it done.
Right.
And now there's like creative people, but it's like, I don't know, like maybe information overload, like where do I start? There's these 5 programs to download for free. You know, maybe it's that, I don't know. It's either like too much overload, like too much to choose from, and or way too many people are consuming and not creating anymore, you know?
Exactly. You just hit a good point, John. You know, when you walk around, and, you know, even the other day I was in a movie theater going to watch this pro wrestling broadcast in the movie theater. And the guy next to me has got his thumb scrolling down his screen. And I'm like, isn't it enough that we've got this giant?
Seriously.
we've got a beautiful movie screen, and we're both pro wrestling fans, because here we are sitting on a Sunday night watching wrestling. And why do you need to be scrolling to see what your buddy is tweeting halfway
exactly
across the country, you know?
Exactly, man. That's what I'm saying. We're so, I mean, I don't know if you have kids. I have 5 kids. They consume. You know, they have tablets, phones, you know, like, get. I do pull them away from it and get them to, you know, to participate.
Right.
And, you know, and like, hey, let's actually make some, instead of you watching this, let's make it, you know.
Yeah.
So I've been getting my kids more going down that road. Like, hey, it's cool to enjoy other people's creations and stuff, but how about you make something too? Like, not even just film. I get them to do whatever, like draw something, do, you know, just make something, whatever your creative outlet is, let's do it, you know, because all of us have some creative inkling, you know, we're not aware of it because everyone's too busy consuming, and we might not have anyone alongside of us to be like, hey, that's pretty cool, keep doing that, you know? So,
well, you just hit another great point, encouragement, you know, which is why things like your film festival are so vital. Because, you know, here I run a film festival myself. It's called the Avalonia Festival, which is actually a spinoff from the same story, A Distance from Avalon. But when I run this festival, and I charge pretty, you know, modest entry fees, but what I kind of had this epiphany a couple of years ago, I'm going on the 7th festival this November, but basically thinking, what I'm doing is kind of providing a pat on the back, you know,
totally,
like my festival has really low entry fees. I have a lot of awards that I give out. I do my festival very differently. If you get your short film into Avalonia Festival, it's because your film is an award winner. And if your film is not accepted, you didn't win an award. Basically, my festival is a festival of champions, because every film that I don't choose all the films, like, not, it's not a gimme that you're going to enter my festival and get accepted.
Exactly.
But it's an all or nothing festival. You're either in it and you've won a category and time division award, or you're not in it at all. And the reason why I did it like that is because I was sick of having my own work entered and getting accepted into a festival and maybe even playing in front of some people, but then you kind of feel bad if you go through the effort of going to this festival and you don't win the award, you know.
And I
kind of said that's kind of a shitty feel, pardon my French, but it's like kind of a bad feeling when you go and you don't win. I'm like, how do I eliminate that? And the answer was, if my festival only has the actual winners and it's just done a little bit differently, then that won't be an issue. And some people have a hard time adapting to that. Like, you know, like they don't quite get it.
But
the people that finally do get it really appreciate it, because like, oh, you're just doing things a little bit different here. And but the epiphany I had was that I think a lot of people get mommy's hug, but they don't get daddy's pat on the back. And I see that a lot with myself and other filmmakers and actors, especially, like, it's not really a mommy issue. It's a daddy issue. Like daddy never showed appreciation or respect for me as an artist. So now I'm constantly seeking the approval of some director or some producer or some audience or whatever. And I mean, you can really take that to some pretty hardcore levels. I mean, if you think about these young people, a lot of women doing like OnlyFans and stuff, that's a real exploitive. That's a pretty exploitive take on the whole, you know, electric complex or daddy issue complex. But just for people like myself that are trying to make art, there's some level of looking for that approval that you probably never got as a child.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the approach of the Tornado Music and Film Festival is I realized, because I'm a musician, I realized the process of filmmaking. And I'm like, filmmakers are a special kind of crazy. Because it takes a lot to get a film done. Like we were saying, you know, if you're a writer, you hand it off to all these other people. It's out of your hands now, right? And so it takes a lot to get a film done, way more than it takes to record like a CD for a band. And so when I realized that, and like all these people are making films, I mean, regardless of what an individual thinks of that person's art or their work, there's somebody out there that's going to appreciate it. Like I find it hard to believe that, you know, someone that makes something, there's going to be nobody out there that doesn't like it at all. Like, I don't know. I just find it hard to believe. But with that being said, the approach of, you know, the Tornado Music and Film Festival is like, hey, you spent your time making this movie. You've had this thing locked up inside you or whatever, and you finally got this movie made. Let me help you find people to show your film to. Like, that's kind of the approach of Tornado Music and Film Festival is like, you made something awesome. Let me bring people to watch it, you know, because that's what it's all about. You obviously made it because you want someone to watch it. And like, that's what I say in the first like four sentences on the film festival is like, here I am and here you are. Let's work together. You know, that's how it all is, you know?
Well, it's a great approach. And even the fact that you got Foxwoods involved as a venue, that's a great, it's a great facility, and it kind of shows that you mean business with this thing, which is
absolutely. And you know, so I this, you know, we didn't mention too much of of the film that was entered. I mean, we started to. Do you want to give bit? Do you want to give like a little bit of the monologue, maybe, or just like we kind of said what it was? I mean, it's like 4.5 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, at least give
them like a little bit of idea of what it is.
Yeah, let me get into character here.
There you go.
So I'm gonna go. So deal with it. And what was your name again, brother?
Oh, Joe? It's John.
No, this is the character. I'm doing the character here.
Okay.
What was your name again, brother? Joe. Joseph was my father's name. No, I was not named after him. Jean Lacroix. Jean Lacroix Distance. Yes. That does translate to John. John, distance from the cross. I am known for my distinct home, and as such, my title reads Distance from Avalon. And please pardon my boldness, sir, for implying that we were brothers, but aren't all men brothers, sir? At least all kind and humble men. So that's a little taste
that's
of it.
Cool.
Thanks, buddy. That's off the top of my head. That's
very cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole piece is 4.5 minutes. And basically, it's a proof of concept video for the bigger storyline, so the bigger piece.
Distance from Avalon. Right.
Right. So, A Distance from Avalon, which is available as a novel on Amazon. I've also written it as a screenplay. And I believe it or not, I've written it as a stage play as well.
That's cool.
So, I mean, I do feel, and here's the thing, Jonathan, and maybe, you know, maybe you can relate to this or some of your listeners can. Sometimes you feel like, man, I have all this stuff lined up. If I only had this, you know, billionaire friend or this millionaire friend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Who could be my producer and kind of underwrite all my creative endeavors that I could really make a difference. But the reality is, as you and I have been discussing today, it's kind of like with things like YouTube and Amazon, there are these access points to reach bigger audiences.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're lucky or you work hard enough, make some money.
Yeah.
Maybe I get to the point if I keep grinding with these projects, that I can self-finance them rather than looking for my millionaire friend or my,
well, exactly,
you know, whatever, my uncle, or, you know, I don't have a rich uncle. I wish I did, but
that's what I was kind of getting at with saying with all the content you have, and like, I'll stay with all the other creators. It's like, look, you already have all this content. Let's get it out on all these other verticals and you get money coming in.
Right.
You know, right. And then when, and that money comes in, you use that to you know, push forth your real vision, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, that's great. Mike, I'm excited to have the film in the festival. It was awesome. And I mean, the second we saw it coming, we're like, oh, this is in.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, that's great.
Yeah, no, it was great. And so, do you have like a website? Do you have other projects you're working on right now? Is there any help you need from anyone else? Like, you know,
yeah,
you have a website to aim people towards?
Yeah, the simplest thing is mikemessier.com, MikeMessier.com. And if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, I've recently updated all my social media links.
Perfect. So there you go. Yeah,
I've got my subscribe to Mike Messier YouTube channel, my books. You'll see the books are there on Amazon. If you have Kindle Unlimited, you can read them for free.
That's cool. There you go. You know,
so it's all there. And like I said, mikemessier.com is probably the simplest place. And then you go from there.
What are you working on now then? Do you need any help with whatever you're working on now?
Well,
do you have any new films or?
I'm actually going to film a follow-up to A Seduction of Distance.
Okay.
There's a female character named Heartbreak. And for the last couple of months, I've been working with this website, breakdownservices.com/actorsaccess, to put a casting call out. But I have gotten all my audition tapes in from the potential actresses, and it's really just up to me to choose somebody.
That's cool.
So, I mean, there's always... And once again, man, it was like, you know what? I did this piece with myself, this opening proof of concept video, but why not put the female character on screen too?
Totally.
Because that might be the thing that triggers a bigger response than just myself.
Absolutely. No, that's it, man. You got to keep pushing the content out there. Like I said, that I think that's the key to all of you creators, is just keep pushing your content out there. And then you're going to get it on the vertical that you want it on eventually.
Yeah, it's a good plan.
Because even on Netflix, all that you see these new, you know, movies showing up on Netflix. Just the other day, I saw one. I remember the title of it, but it was like based off of a book. I was like, there you go. You know, like it's like all these TV shows and you know, movies and everything. They always seem to be based off of a book. You know, it's not scripts getting pitched to someone or whatever. So it's just funny how it works out that way. You know,
it's a fluid world of entertainment. Things change.
Totally. And because of where we are net at now with our sort of consumption, you pointed it out. You're in a movie theater and a guy sitting next to you is still on his phone. It's like one giant screen isn't enough. We need two screens. And not only do we need two screens, I need one thing on one screen and like social media on another. Like I need to have like sort of some sort of contact with, you know, with humans, I guess, even though there's a person sitting next to me. And like that's, you know, it's just like we're consuming so much stuff. So like there's more people reading books, there's more people watching movies, there's more people listening to podcasts. Like that's why I'm saying this. You could reach everyone. You could basically, if you took your content and put it on every vertical, you'd reach everyone.
Right.
You know, because everyone's listening to some form of content, whether it's a book or a radio, you know, like that.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. The day and age that we live in, it makes no sense to not get your story like on every platform, because that's how you reach everyone.
I agree, and I appreciate your insights on that too, because like I said, the Audible thing is something I've definitely got to do, because I listen to Audible, you know what I mean?
So right. I do too. Like yeah. I have almost 500 books in my Audible library.
Nice.
So, you know, that's what I'm saying. People, the Audible listenership alone has gone up like 500%. And so just in the past few years. So
it's definitely that medium of audiobook is definitely exciting to me. And I want to follow your advice. It may not be this week because right now I'm just kind of getting my print copy books up to snuff with the proofreading and the marketing and all that. But once I get through that, then I'll start thinking, okay, how am I going to record this as an audiobook and et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. But yeah, Mike, we're looking forward to hopefully you can make it up here. I know you're in Florida, but
yeah, I'm hoping to as well. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday who's in West Virginia, and I might stop by.
I might do a little road trip.
Yeah, because I'm really hoping the gas prices go down a little bit at least by August.
They better not be going up by August.
I know. Sure. Because it's sad, but that is a factor when you.
It is.
You know.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that even if it's more expensive than I hope, if it's still doable, I'll do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully, I mean, we got a lot of people. I got. There's another guy from California that I talked to. He was also from Rhode Island. Wow. And he's like, I'm going to come out. I haven't been back east in a while, but he's like, I'm going to come to this. So I was like, I can't wait, man. So it's really cool. I'm excited to hear a lot of filmmakers that like really want to come, you know, not just to my event, but like a lot of them are just saying like, you know, yeah, I'm excited to come to Foxwoods and everything, but because of the pandemic and everything, everyone's been saying, I need to, you know, get back with more like-minded people and kind of get back to networking and, you know, talking, you know, kind of talking shop with other people and stuff. So like a bunch of people have missed that because my film festivals are all about that. Like we always have kind of after parties and stuff. We want to connect, you know, connect all the filmmakers and stuff together. And cause you never know what's going to come out of it. You know, you might find the next coolest cinematographer for yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Well, John, I appreciate and respect that you're doing the in-person event because like I said, as a film festival organizer myself for a couple of years, all these festivals that I was entering start sending these kind of humble emails. Hey folks, we're going to do a online presentation this year.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, and I get it. I mean, health and safety first, but if you've entered $50 or $40 into some of these festivals that charge that much, you're expecting a live in-person event and instead you're just getting a cyber event.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, is it out of line to kind of request some of your money back or what? But I mean, COVID, as bad as it is and as serious as it is, I'm not trying to diminish it.
But it
has become in some ways everybody's go to the dog ate my homework.
Exactly. You know what exactly. I mean? Totally. Totally.
So, no. And I've had people pass away from it that I've known. So I'm not trying to diminish that either or the seriousness of it. But at the same time, there are times when you can kind of see that people use it as the
crutch or whatever.
The crutch and you can't really argue with it because then you'd be a crass on
exactly, exactly.
You get hashtagged into oblivion, as I like to say.
Ooh, that's a good one. Hashtagged into oblivion. I'm gonna have to remember that one. But yeah, Mike, it was great having you on, dude. And everyone, you don't want to miss this film, August 27th at Foxwoods. Be there. There's going to be links in the show notes and everything. There'll be a link to Mike's website and stuff like that. Mike, again, thanks for coming on, dude, and appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you for doing all this, John, and thanks for supporting and encouraging other artists of all levels. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Cool, man.
And everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And don't forget to embrace your storm. See ya.
Tornado with Jonathan Nadeau. If you haven't yet, please subscribe now so you're first to hear new episodes with more stories of inspiration about the highs and lows of life and how embracing the storm is so much more fulfilling of a life than being crushed by the weight of the world. And until then, we hope you're inspired to do something, whether it's creating, participating, or learning, whatever leads you to your personal passion.